Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Bloody
Angola,
a prison podcast, 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we're back again just for
the Chase Team members. First ever Chase Team member episode. So, y'all, if you're listening to this, you know we love you. And
100% we love you.
Support. And this can be the first of many that you get. We hope to do at least one a month.
That's right. And we're going to lock these up in what we call the solitary confinement vault.
Just for y'all. This is our way of showing y'all thanks and our appreciation. We appreciate you so much. And Kelly, we really appreciate you being here. So y'all, Kelly Jennings, you may not have heard her episodes yet, but she's a wealth of knowledge. Worked in Angola as a classification officer. She's a career, lifelong teacher now, and the criminal mind fascinates you and everything else. So thank you so much for being here for the first ever Chase Team episode.
I'm so honored.
This is great.
I know. I'm excited to be on the team.
So yes. What happened was, on the other two episodes you did, and young can agree.
Oh my God, they were fire, they y'all. Were fire. And it's so good, in fact, that we flew her in from Livingston Parish, right, Louisiana,
all the way to Del Norte Avenue, you know?
For this episode.
Anyway, the episodes were fire. I think you are a whole lot like me. I mean, you just go off, right, in the passion. And so we were going to do Sean Vincent Gillis for the first one. Totally changed.
We like you better.
That's right. We like you better.
Thanks. Better than Sean Vincent Gillis.
Yes. the You're more fire.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, with that being said.
Yeah. So, and folks, we apologize. We don't know what order that we're going to necessarily drop these episodes. So, as Woody said, Kelly has done a couple of episodes with us that were such fire, and she tells a story so well, and she has so many interesting things to say about Angola, Bloody Angola, that we asked her and didn't even have to beg to get her to do the episode with us just for you guys. So it's a couple of stories that she's going to share, and we're going to enjoy it, and y'all are going to enjoy it.
It's going to be raw and unscripted, y'all. We have not talked about it ahead of time. I know not what she's going to say,
that's right.
But I can't wait, and who knows where this is going to go.
Yeah,
it's gonna be
we're ready.
I'm just excited someone wants to hear me talk. All my husband does is they be quiet. I'm like, hey.
I just ignore my wife.
I'm just kidding. He loves me. And he listens to my stories. But,
yes, he does.
You know, man, prison, right? I mean, it's not. It wasn't really the dream I think my mom had for me whenever I said, hey, Mom, I'm going to prison, you know.
And, yeah.
It's kind of funny, too. My daddy, my stepdaddy wears shirts I got him from Angola, and it always says a gated community on it. Hey. And so many people would stop him back in the day and be like, oh, man, you know about Angola? He's like, oh, my daughter's in Angola. And they're like, they would just stop and stare at me like, oh, no, she works there. Yeah. She's not in there.
You know? But you know what? You were in there. You're serving. I always said when I went through the gates, I was serving time too.
Yeah.
Because only for 12 hours at a time, but I said I was serving time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because your life outside of the prison walls, it shuts off, right? I mean, it's
sleeping
totally
and, yeah.
And hanging out with people, and you're not worried about, for the most part, you know.
Whole different world than when you.
The games that are being played.
Whole different world than when you go inside, right?
Yeah.
I think you just did such a great job of not only painting the overall picture of Angola, but then getting to bring the true.
Yeah.
The nature of the beast, right?
Yeah. I mean, because it's multi, there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people involved. And it's not just about what the bad guy did, but the ripple effects.
A whole different world, a whole different set of rules.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes it's funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of funny shit.
Like, I had this inmate. I'll tell you about it real quick. So where I worked at this point in time was Maine Prison. And my office that I was in was down, like you actually went down some steps into this, I don't know, it seems kind of dangerous now thinking about, you know, like you're kind of trapped down there. And but, you know, you get clerks that they come and go. But
the clerks being trustees,
inmates
that work for you.
Yeah, inmates that'll kind of help you out, like help you file papers or, you know, run errands or whatever you need them to do. And I cannot remember, honestly, if he was my clerk at this time or if he was just an inmate that seemed to always come down there when I was trying to do something. God darn, you know. I'm telling you, high school, teaching high school and prison are a lot alike.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit stronger, than prison. But he came in, and this was a big guy. He was a black male. He was probably maybe 6'2", 6'3". And he was a nice looking guy. Like he didn't seem scary. Like he was jumping out of the bushes, you know, and he was a murderer. Yeah. He would just come down there and talk to me. And when he would walk in, he talked just like this. Just like this. Muscles. And he just wanted to talk about my shoes. And we would just talk about my shoes. And he would say, and I'm literally trying to type and do stuff. And it's just weird because I'm like, okay, friend. Like, not friend, but you're like, okay, girl. I don't know what to call you. Because he's like the strapping guy. And he's just not talking to me like that.
And, very feminine.
Very. And he would cross his legs. And he'd say, tell me about the mall. It's been so long. Talk to me about the mall. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, well, we have what's called the new mall now, which, you know, hasn't been there for a while now. And he was from New Orleans. And he was like, well, what kind of stores? And I'm like telling him about Claire's, you know, like little girl ear piercing stores and the food court. There's the court. I'm like, dude, there's a carousel in the middle. They ride rides? I'm like, yes. I mean, it was like so bizarre, but we would just be having our discussions. And I was like, well, okay, I know you weren't supposed to do this, but I mean, I'm human. Right. And I'd be like, well, hey, fella, like, why are you here? What did this Southern Belle do, you know? And he'd say, oh, he said, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, I bet.
And I'm like, right? I mean, what happened? And he was like, oh, you know, drugs and shootouts. Like, oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, living that dream in my private school life. And I was like, well, tell me about it. And so he was just telling me about, he was just telling me like about his brother and I don't know, in New Orleans. They were like thugs, like, you know, on the street. Right. But obviously he'd been called what's turned out, right, when he got in prison. And so if you don't know lingo, turned out, I don't know if you've covered it in depth or anything, but if you're turned out, that's basically a straight male on the street that once he comes into prison, he takes on the role of the traditional female. And, you know, you can let your mind.
Pretty much he's the catcher. Sometimes he's the batter too.
Yeah. He was the wife, if you want to. Yeah. But anyway, but he was a big wife. I'm like, he was the swolest wife I ever came across. But, you know, we'd be just talking about stuff, and he would tell him about the mall, and he would tell me about his brother, and they had just gotten to this squabble in New Orleans, and oh my God, bullets flew, and it just, oh my God, girl, you just wouldn't even understand. I'm like, no, I would not understand. And I'm like, well, dude, like, what happened to you here? Like, why are you, because I was young, I didn't. Right. He's like, what do you mean, what happened? I'm like, were you prissy in the shootout? Like, how'd you run away? Like, what happened? You know? And, oh, no, it was different on the street. Yeah. And I was like, oh. And y'all, his voice went from talking like this. He was like, I was a G on the street, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was like, all right. I ain't questioning you. Yeah. And then he would just jump right back into talking about my shoes and things. And so they moved me from main prison to Camp D at one point. And so, you know, they'll move you around. They'll shuffle you. And sometimes it's for, you know, well, it's always for a reason, but sometimes it was more serious than others. I can tell you, at one point they had moved me to Camp J. I only made it 2 weeks at Camp J. Not because of me. Right. From what I understand, I was told it was actually because of me, but I had no clue. But at Camp J, everybody's locked up. It's a lockdown.
It's the worst place to be in Angola.
Right. Was. Like, that's where the
was. Yeah, shut down.
The bad, bad, bad guys were.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to tell everybody a quick story that I heard from an actual inmate about Camp J that was in Camp J for 25 years. And so correct me if I'm wrong, people, but is there not almost like when you go into Camp J, there's an area, and then you go into another area, and this area is locked, and this area is locked.
Yeah, there's always
it's almost like a hallway by itself. Then you go through that and you're actually in the deal. Well, he said Camp J was so bad that prisoners, the cinder block was so old, it was breaking off in pieces, and literally, the prisoners could break through their wall into the next freaking cell. He said it happened all the time. They would punch through the cinder block. It would just chip apart, and they would chip it enough to where they could kick, and they're in another cell beating the shit out of another inmate. No lie. I'm like, dang, no wonder they closed it.
That's why we don't go to prison, folks.
Yeah. I mean, the Kool-Aid man breaks through your freaking cell. Oh, what the hell?
Oh, yeah.
But I was at Camp J, and so they're locked down, but then they also had inmate workers, right, to bring the food and stuff like that. And the reason they said they moved me, I was there 2 weeks, and then they're like, hey, you're moving back, and I'm taking it personal. Like, what did I do? I'm working so hard here. And they said, now, this was older than me, so I don't have a lot of knowledge about it, but the ski mask rapist. Are you familiar with that case?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Apparently, there was a guy that was a ski mask rapist around here somewhere, but they apparently had seen him sleuthing when I was making my round. So I don't know if he was like a worker bringing the food, but it seemed like everywhere I went, he was right there behind me. So they're like, yeah, we'll move her. I'm like, well, thank you.
They were just trying to prevent, preventive maintenance, if you will.
Yeah, so they'll kind of move you around, and hey, I appreciate it, whoever made that decision. No thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't get raped and killed.
So yeah, that would be here today. That would have sucked.
This would have no bonus episode, Kelly.
This is Kelly. She was here.
She told us this before.
Get a psychic in here, right? Maybe she could tell my story. Yeah. All right, but anyway, so I was moved back to... moved from J to D, and then from D back to main prison. And this is going to matter, okay? So I was gone for a while, like a couple of months, really. And then one day I just dropped back on the walk, you know? Right. Well, to back up a little bit, they had the rodeo, the Angola rodeo. And have you, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but.
Yeah, it's a long-running tradition every weekend in October. Now, I think one or two weekends in April. Yeah, big deal.
Yeah. And so what happens is the inmates get to go out, and again, they have to be cleared or whatever. And some of them do have to stay behind the fences if they're not trustees, but they put on a rodeo. It raises a ton of money for the inmates and for prison, and they are able to, you know, even though they're inmates and they're locked up in prison, we still have to have programs and things to keep them occupied. I mean, you don't want a bunch of people running around with nothing to do.
Right.
You know, that's the devil's work.
Hand, yeah, there you go. Idle hands.
Right. Yeah. And cool fun fact, by the way, the entire stadium, if you look it up, was built by inmate labor in 30 days.
Really?
30 days. It's
no
big.
No kidding.
It's big.
Huge. It's an arena.
Yeah. I didn't watch it. That was the stat they gave me when I did the tours. Yeah. 30 days, all inmate labor. That's impressive. Yeah. And they want to work. That's, right. You know, it's not like we're, you know.
Well, it passes the time.
Yeah, and it gives you something to do. But anyway, so the rodeo had happened. So when the rodeo happens, free people get to come in, and they get to buy hobby craft from the inmates that they create. And there are a lot of talented.
Oh, yeah. I remember being on cell block and the guy sketching a picture of me.
I
was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is a Picasso.
Right?
Not because
like,
of me.
Like, bro, why didn't you become an artist instead of a rapist?
Yeah, Clifford Etienne, who fought Mike Tyson.
Yes.
I remember. And then I had him on my cell block, and he got out and became the prominent boxer. He was an interstate boxing champion. He got out and got fought Tyson. He lost because it busted his inner eardrum, and got back on the drugs on the street, took a Baton City's duty weapon for him in a fight, went to kill him in the gun jam.
Mm.
And so, but he's a fucking phenomenal artist. His art at the rodeos,
dude.
He does oil paintings and shit, and they make a ton of money. But they use that money and they send it home to their families.
Yes,
and like
yes.
That.
And so, and I thought it was kind of neat too to see how much they make money, but they do send it home. Some of them have kids. A lot of them have kids.
Now, the free people can't walk up to the inmate and just get the shit. Say that they give them a ticket and they have to go pay somewhere else.
Right. So you're not handing that would be terrible. We do not want money in prison. Barter City, right?
And that's a huge deal at the rodeo. Yeah. So my mother and father-in-law actually had a picture painted by a prisoner over their fireplace, huge, big as this table, and it was of a bayou scene. The colors used for that picture was like some pretty blues, and there was a moonlight up there, and there was a Cajun house or whatever that's sitting on the bayou. It is an absolutely like Picasso looking painting. I mean, I love that painting. Came from a prisoner, and they fell in love with it when they saw it. And I never asked them what they paid for it, but I don't know. I don't know if they're cheap, expensive, or what. But on the street, that would have been. I mean, in a museum, that would have been a $10,000 painting all day long.
Oh yeah, and then that's what's impressive is just because you've made terrible decisions doesn't mean you're not talented.
That's right.
And you learn that a lot of them have incredible talents, and not everybody's stupid. You know, they just screwed up. But
I always say prison's full of dummies, but not all of them.
No, there's doctors, lawyers. I mean, there's a lot of people in prison. But anyway, so. After the rodeo, they would clean up, like inmates would have to clean up. So this guy, this inmate that was the real sweet one, he always had these Oakleys on. Now, they were knockoffs. They were fake. But he had found them at the rodeo, the Oakley sunglasses. And he wore those things proud as punch. Okay? That was like his thing. Okay? He was known for those Oakleys. And so I got moved around. And then here we go. A couple months later, I am back at Maine prison. So, you know, I'm just jumping right back into things. I grab my paperwork and it's just another day, another dollar, and I'm making my rounds. Well, again, if you've listened to prior episodes, you know, you got to go down the long walk. And then I was going on the east yard. And so I go down, I take my left, and I'm walking, and there's a building right there. And it's like the warden's office over that side of the prison, the prison. And there's this inmate standing there, strapping, tall, big guy. And I want you to imagine I'm far away and I'm walking and he is leaning against the wall and he's got one leg bent, one foot up on the wall, and he's just got his head kind of cocked over looking my direction. And he's not doing anything. He's just standing there. And as I get closer, I recognize, that's whatever. Now, he said his name was Daniel. Okay. Obviously, that's not his name, but that's Daniel. I recognize Danielle as I'm walking up. And he puts his hand up on the top of his nose, and he slowly pulled those sunglasses down down to the tip of his nose, and he's looking at me down over those sunglasses. And I just kind of cocked my head back and looked at him, and he said, "And where have you been, ma'am?" I said, "Working. Where have you been?" He said, "You don't call. You don't fax. You don't text. You don't write a letter. You just up and leave a girl and have me here all by my damn self. Look the other way. And I was like, I didn't know how to take that.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry that I left you, Danielle. Yeah. And
Sin and Gully, y'all.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just such a crapshoot. It's so funny. Yeah. And so I kind of walked.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Oh, yeah. So I just kind of walked past him, and then I just stopped. You know, I'm not apologizing to him, but then I was like, did I just leave you? Like, is it that serious? So I turned around, and I was like, I'm sorry, Danielle, that I was moved to another camp. And he dropped that leg down. He said, well, apology accepted. Sisters can't be angry.
Oh.
And he just started walking with me back down. Back down the walk.
Sisters can't be
sisters
angry.
Can't be angry.
Oh my god, that's funny.
He was like your bestie.
I guess. I don't know, but that tickled me.
Let's talk about the sexuality real quick, because it's important. There's, you know, we're not being homophobics or anything.
Absolutely.
Like that. We're talking about prison terms and what goes on. So, there's a plethora of things we talk about, but one, not all men that go in that have homosexual relations with other men think that they're gay.
Right. Survival tactic.
Gay for the stay.
but they'll tell you straight up, I got to do what I got to do, right? And I remember going in the shower one time and I was watching this inmate. I was on dorm relieve somebody. One inmate would watch me. And if I moved, he would turn and look at another inmate across the way. That inmate would turn his head and look at somebody who's in the bathroom. So I figured it out. I waited and ran into the fucking bathroom. There was one guy behind the guy, hadn't been up behind the wall, was wearing him out. Wearing out. He said, sorry. I said, oh, stop. He said, oh, sorry. I'm going whole anyway. You got to let me get this nut. I was like, I'll be outside. They came out, cuffed up.
I'll be outside.
They were naked. I wasn't going in there.
Why didn't you jump in between them, Woody?
Yeah.
But he told me, I got sent back to the working cell block not long after that, and he told me, he said, I'm not gay. He said, but I got to do what I do to get my nut while I'm down, right? And then get back on the street.
And then there's
straight.
That.
Right.
Then there's Danielle, the ones who take it on the full persona. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and so it's a game, or it's a hustle. Everybody's got a hustle, right? And
an angle too.
Yeah, an angle, right? And so they're not doing it for free.
Right.
They're gaining protection from it. So if they're a traditionally straight man on the street, and then they come into prison, they know they're going to be down for a while. Maybe they're a smaller one. Maybe they're inexperienced. I know statistically, when we would do like PREA, I don't know if you're probably not familiar with that if you're not in the prison systems, but we have in Louisiana the Prison Rape Elimination Act. And so rape is an issue. It's not something that we can overlook. We have a duty and an obligation to protect these inmates while they're under our care. That said, people are going to do what they're going to do.
Right.
All right. They understand the rules, and they're going to do what they want to do and hopefully not get caught. And again, disease transmission. We want to cut down on disease transmission. Right. So, but under the Prison Rape Elimination Act, they also keep stats on that. If you're a nerd like me and you like to look things up, and sometimes it can be staff on inmate, it can be inmate on staff, it can be inmate on inmate. There's a plethora of ways that this can go down. But there is no consensual sex in prisons whatsoever. Even consensual, there's none
by law and by the rules.
By rule and by law.
Right.
That's the rules.
Right.
And so even if two people agree that this is what they want to do, if we bust you, you're done. There's none of that. Because we know, too, it's part of the barter and protection system, right. And we want to try to limit that.
Yeah, and you're automatically going to the hole if you get caught doing that.
It's unintended?
Very good.
That's the best one ever.
Yes, pun intended. That's the best ever.
Oh,
yeah, they're going to swing you.
Sorry.
That was good. Great. Chase team members, you might love that one. I remember this. I got to tell a story. They had this little bitty short black guy. I mean, he had to be like 5 feet, right? And had this big, tall black guy, big, like 300 pounds, prison muscle, just muscled out guy. And you would have thought the situation was reversed, but the little guy was the bull, and the big guy was a sissy.
Was his pump.
And it was the gal boy. And the just blew my mind every time I'd see them together. I mean, this guy almost looked like a midget, right? I don't know if that's a small person, whatever the fuck you want to call him. He was almost that small, but he was wearing out big boy.
That's crazy. But
I talked to one inmate who was in Angola for 25 years, and he was telling his story of when he first went from hunts to Angola. And when he went into Angola, he'd never been there. And they put him in I think it was Camp B. So they put him in there, and he said, at this time, Camp B was primarily where the punks were. That's what they called them, punks or sissies. Yeah,
that's a prison term.
And he said, so I'm not trying to be politically incorrect or anything, but that's what they were, punks. That's what we called them. He said, so I've never been in Angola, only heard about it like everybody else, and I had been in hunts, and they're like, oh, you going to Angola? Oh, you going to the bad place? He said, I walked in Camp B. And he said, I see guys with their shirts tied up like this. I see guys with their freaking ass hanging out of their shorts and all. And they're all like Danielle talking like that. And he said, this is Angola. What the hell? He said it was like he was in Bizarre World. And he said eventually, you know, he ran into a friend he knew there. And the guy's like, you in Camp B? And he said, you need to get out of there. They're going to think you a punk. So he ended up transferring somehow. But, yeah, you know, just they do exist.
Yeah. And in other states, I know that there are states or, I don't know, counties that will segregate the populations for their own safety. We didn't have that when I was out there. You just kind of went and did your thing. And then if you had an enemy or something, you know, put you in each other's jackets or your records so that you wouldn't be housed together or something like that.
Inmate sex thing is a very real deal. Even masturbation is illegal.
Oh, they used to have old school shot books, though. You remember
that? Yeah. He's gonna say, you can tell that one.
Oh, I got a great one on masturbation. So... This is a great story.
Kelly Delsing.
Yet another prisoner I've talked to, y'all. It seems like it's all I talk to lately. But there was a guy, he was imprisoned. So they had trade stuff there you could do. And he was in the welding trade deal. And so he was going to be a welder when he got released. And so they had there are these little spaces, picture them like closets, and there's a curtain and you go in and you shut it and a red light comes on and you're welding in there, right? So that's where the guys would go to jack off. They would go inside this welding thing and that's where they get off. So they knew when that red light was on.
What was in there?
Oh, they had Playboy magazines from like 1920 in
there.
That's
what they were called, shot books.
Yeah, and so the magazine would always stay in there. And what? So the magazine, you know, it might be 1992, but that magazine might be 1972 Playboy. But everybody looked at that, and that was like the booth that they went in to handle themselves.
And so, you better not take it out of there either.
Yeah, that's like the girlfriend.
Who took
and they would get attached. Yeah, they get attached to the pictures.
Who has January 1973?
Yes. So he goes in there and he's doing his thing. And all of a sudden the curtain opens and there's a guard jerking him out of there. And he's literally got it in his hand still. And he's like, man, what the fuck? And the guard's like, pull your pants up, put your dick up and come on or whatever. And so he does. And he said, well, let me ask you something. How did you know I was doing that in there? And the guard said, you were in there welding, but there was no sparks on the floor.
Oh, God.
You know, so you're supposed to be welding, you see sparks, and they looked, and there was no sparks. He said, I knew you were doing something in there.
I mean, we all have hormones and stuff like that, but, you know, it does need to be controlled, and because of disease transmission and stuff like that.
Yeah, they threw him in the hole. No pun intended, for that.
Yeah. Basically, you know, they can't have these relationships or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I know that it happens. Everyone knows that it happens. We just try to minimize because it is also, like I said, for protection. They'll team up with each other. They'll barter with it. Just like
they pimp them out. The pimp, the bull will pimp them out. Not only for sex, like to wash people's dirty underwear, hand wash, and instead of going to prison wash, that's a big fucking deal. And so they're in the cell, washed in the clean water in the toilet, hand scrubbing somebody else's drawers because you're the punk.
Right, and you're making the bed. But Wow. You know, you never know what you're dealing with, but there were signs of whether you're dealing with a punk or not, eyebrow arching, tight cuffed. And again, the signs may have changed now, but tight roll pants at the bottom, you know, swishy steps and stuff like that. But sometimes they were on the low, though. You wouldn't know unless you knew. So you just kind of have to watch and make sure that you don't want someone injured. You know, they have male inmates with breast implants.
That's right. That's right.
That could be a big problem for you once you're locked up.
Somebody. I won't even touch that one.
Yeah. That could be an issue. So I know that
I would have to thank you as being a young, attractive female in Angola. Somebody had to.
Oh, yeah. Somebody got me. So.
I mean, it's the nature of the beast, man.
Yeah. And I'm going to make light of this story because what else
you
going
to do? Well, you don't have to tell if you don't want to.
No, I'll tell it. Well.
This is in the vault. So only people are going to see this are patron members.
Okay. So I was at Camp F.
no pun intended.
Sorry, Mom. Dadgummit. All right. So I was making my rounds, and again, cell block, and then there's a cinder block wall, cell block, cinder block wall. So you can imagine if you're standing at a cell block and you're talking to somebody, the cell next to you, you're really not, unless you were far back, you really can't see what all is happening right next to you. It's kind of a weird thing. So I'm talking to this inmate in front of me, handling legitimate business. And then out of the corner of my eye, I'm young. I'm like, oh, my God, is this inmate having a seizure? Because he is flailing dramatically. He was having a seizure, y'all. Holy shit. This was dangerous. This
had to town.
Grand Mall was given a new. Yeah. A new.
Wasn't no Pettit.
Holy crap. So I'm like, oh, my, right? Yeah. So I step back to assess this situation, this medically clearly needing medical assistance, isn't it? And honey, when I stepped back, I said, Jesus Christ, you're going to injure yourself, son. You're going to pull that off. Put it away. Put it away. And so then, you know, the guy on the CEO comes running. He's like, oh, you know, and I was like, all right. I mean, it was like Silence of the Lambs on steroids.
Clarice.
Hello, Clarice.
Oh, my God. The star of his fantasy.
That was very rude of him, Clarice. Danielle pops up around the corner.
The inmate, the one I was talking to, though, when that all kind of like went down, though, he was like, "Dad, gut lead," and say, "Dead gum."
Yeah, he was like,
"You're messing up. I'm trying to get something done here." You know, like, I don't know what to do right now. There's so much happening in one small space.
Best, man.
He tried to get me, but he got himself.
Yeah, he got himself.
Thankfully.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and you know, there were times you would walk up on things that just didn't look quite right, but you didn't catch it in the moment, you know. And I know one time too, this was interesting. So, inmate male, that was like fun. Inmate male was some kind of interesting stuff going on. Sometimes it was boring. Sometimes,
because you'd read all that, right?
Yeah, I didn't have to, but sometimes it just would be in my stuff or whatever, and I'd be opening it and trying to figure out what's going on. And well, Jesus, you know, between death threats and Danielle and it really Angola, when you say the bloody Angola, sometimes it was like, what the heck, you know, is happening here? But I remember one time I opened a card and it said, "To my love," and I opened it and it was all this love. Lovey-dovey talk. And so, but I got confused because it was interinstitutional mail. Yeah. I'm like, wait, how did it get? Did I open it in the wrong? I'm sitting there wasting my freaking time trying to figure out. And then it was signed Daryl or Mike, you know, and it was sent to Bruce, you know. I was like,
Bubba.
Oh, God. All right. And I just close it back up, slide it back
in. Was it
in.
Sticky with you?
No. Jesus, stop. What is it?
I'm sorry.
So that was interesting. But what was really shocking to me, I mean, it isn't now, but I remember it was outside mail.
Yeah.
And I opened it and was looking at something. But it struck me as odd. The stamp was like thick, like real thick. And I'm just a curious human being, you know, like, what could that be? So I was reading the mail, and it was obviously sexy time mail from a woman to a inmate. And so peel back the stamp, and right there, about how big is that? I don't know.
Half an inch.
Half an inch. I mean, the size of a stamp. Behind a stamp were little teeny tiny Polaroid, like shrunk down pictures that were cut out of this like 50 something year old white woman in the most ungodly position, sending these photos to this inmate. And I was just like in shock and awe. I didn't know what to do. And I, when I finally saw the inmate that they were being sent to, he had a little bitty teeny tiny little black guy. He was, running. I don't know, 29. And he's got this old 60-year-old woman sending her little teeny tiny.
Not only taking the time to take the pictures, but getting them shrunk down and then trying to get it in through the system. That's wow.
Wow.
Like, I bet she got a lot of mileage out of that one.
Bro, walk in Walmart and find you a man. Why you got to send miniature Polaroids?
Maybe she didn't even, Bubba wasn't getting out.
Captive audience is all I can say.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Captive audience. Hey, he wasn't going to cheat on with another woman.
No.
Physically, anyway.
No, but that was interesting.
That's crazy. I mean, I know stamps being used dipped in acid or cocaine and stuff like that for drugs, but I'd never heard one with tiny pictures behind it.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
You know, too, that's currency. Porn is currency.
We went. Oh, I'm sorry.
The one of the guys, the longest one, he's still on death row. The one that killed that little boy, him and his lover killed the little boy and left him Magnolia Beach. Mm-hmm. He actually sued the Department of Corrections. They busted him with gay porn and on death row. And they took it from him.
Wonder how that got in there.
Exactly. Well, obviously, we hadn't even talked about this, but like 90% of everything that gets in is free people that brings in the guards. But they seized it. He sued. Now, I don't know how the fuck this works out with the rule book and everything else. He sued that he had a right to have gay porn. And he fucking won.
Was it a freedom of speech thing or was
it? Yes. And then shit, the fucking federal courts granted it to him. They had to give him gay porn. And the doctor that worked death row is the one that told me about that. Jan's husband. God, Jan, I love her to death.
Sylvester.
Jan Sylvester.
Oh, that's my neighbor. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
She's the best.
Yeah. Hello, Jan. Shout out, Jan.
Jan. Yeah, the right pain science. She loves how to read her. But her husband worked death row.
Well, yeah, he's a big old tall fella.
Yeah, big tall.
We are totally off kilter right now, but I just got to tell you that her husband has the biggest feet I've ever seen in my entire life. He wears like a size 16 shoe.
Really?
So now you know.
Were you there for any of the executions? Or was it a moratorium?
I never watched one or anything like that. They were, they practiced for one. Yeah. But when you go into death row, or the execution chamber, the death chamber. When you walk in, again, it looks just like any other dorm or cell block that you're kind of entering. Right. But actually, it's a little, they've changed the color. Hey, this is a fun little side note. Barbara Walters came in and did an interview one time, a long time ago. You can probably look it up. And she did not like the color of the paint on the walls when they were doing the interview. So it's now a pinkish peach color, or it was last time I was there. Yeah. And it's Barbara Walter pink. They painted it for her interview.
Did I know that?
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
So but you walk in there. Now, so the death chamber is literally probably the size of this room that we're in, maybe a little bit wider. It's not very big. It's got a big metal bed that lays flat. And then there's big leather brown straps. And so there's like death row tie down team, you know, left arm, you're responsible for a body part.
That's right.
And make it smooth and seamless. And so they practice bringing him in. What if he fights? What if he doesn't fight?
He's separated from death row. They put in the death watch cell. And then when they go to get him after his last meal and the last prayer, whatever, is sometimes they buck up and they're like going, kicking and screaming. Well, it ain't gonna last for long. But this team goes in. Even if you don't, they go in and they handle their business, right? And it's like clockwork, like a professional NFL football team.
It's clinical.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clinical because you have to plan for the unexpected. Right. What if you have a loose strap? What if the needle, you don't want to be fighting somebody? And now there's these two glass walls that line one side of the room, but the curtain's drawn while they're doing this part.
Yeah, they're strapping them down and running IVs and all that.
Yep, and there's it's separated though, and so like the victim's family and
one side
all that.
And
the other side, they get like a religious representative. Mm-hmm. The media can come. Well, if they're,
I think two from the media, and that's drawn by a pool, and then it's a couple family members or whatever.
But they don't want to make it a scene. It's not a scene. It shouldn't be a show for entertainment. It's justice being served. And so once they get them tied down, you can imagine when the bed's laying down, where the head would be of the person being put to death.
So the bed stands up, so they can make a last statement or whatever. They read the warrant.
There's a big boom mic that's like right there.
Then, then they lay them down.
Yeah,
push it through.
And behind their head, if you want to envision, there's a small, a wall. There's a hole in the wall where IV lines come through. And the executioner is behind like a two-way glass in this little room with a little window because nobody knows who the executioner is.
That's right.
And I respect that because I would not want anyone to know.
Correct. And I had heard, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I had heard that the executioner doesn't even know who has the actual killing stuff.
Yeah,
that, I had heard.
They could push.
Some states do it by machine. Some states do it manually. Just depends on the state.
Even go back to old Sparky, that they nobody knew who the person was that threw the switch.
Yeah,
and I respect that because I wouldn't want people knowing if it was me. And I also, for safety reasons, we don't want other people to know. And there's lots of speculation. Is it a medical person?
Right.
Well, no, it can't be because they take the Hippocratic oath of do no harm. Well, is it just some random person off the street? Who is it?
You know, every execution,
it's Danielle,
death certificate, cause listed for death is homicide by the state of Louisiana.
It is. It's an unnatural death.
That's what everyone's death certificate. And homicide by the state of Louisiana.
I'm going to look that up for my class. That's interesting. I want to show my students. That's kind of interesting. But I do know this, too. Warden Kane, I believe, is the only warden that has seen all methods of execution. So the chair, hanging, and lethal injection, because there's multiple. He wrote a book called Kane's Redemption.
Yeah.
And I was reading it in there, too,
I read that stuff. It's been years since I read it there.
Yeah. So I don't – I have a class set, actually, and have them read it because I think it's interesting, But, so death row is a whole different thing. But they want it to be very clinical, by the book, slam, bam, thank
with
you,
as
ma'am.
As much respect as they can. Yeah, and way more than the fuckers deserve, I can tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they ought to give it to them just like they got.
Hey, I went to Texas one time, Huntsville, Texas. Mm-hmm. All right, and I was touring a prison there because my whole life has been dedicated. I do have a master's degree in criminal justice security administration, but I've dedicated my life to actually learning the truth and how it's done. And so I had the opportunity to go for a 911 dispatch conference to Huntsville, Texas. And if you've never been there, it's a prison town.
Yeah.
It's all prisons. Everybody works for the prison system. And the college, Sam Houston University, is literally in the center of prison. And so, you'll see kids walk into class, and there's guards up on tall walls.
I didn't know that.
It's so interesting. And I did go by an execution there. I can tell you about that if you want. It's not Angola. But
I'm supposed to go to death row to visit Darla Routier, the death row mom.
You're going to go visit her?
In December for Source Justice, yeah. We've been corresponding.
Will you take me, Woody? Let's start a new hashtag. Take Kelly to see Darlie. I know that case where she killed her kids or whatever. But anyway.
Allegedly. Stay tuned. Season 2 Scores Justice. Sorry. Go ahead.
You're innocent until proven guilty by court of law. You have the right to an attorney if you can't afford one. So it's a prison town. And when I went there to tour that, they actually let me go back. And this guy, he was like, wait a minute. You know about Angola? And he worked there.
Right.
He was a major, I think, there. And I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, really? I said, dude, I'm a nobody. You were asking. I'm telling you. And he was like, I want to give you something. It's in my classroom. I need to show you if you ever come by. And I was like, okay. And he goes back and he comes out and he's got a patch he hands me and it says Death Row Tie Down Team.
Oh, shit.
And they don't give those out.
No, you gotta earn that one.
And I was just so impressed because you just don't get it. Right. And I think he was left arm, if I remember correctly. I think he was left arm.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so I got a Death Row Tie Down patch. And
that is crazy.
And I just think that's crazy.
I'm gonna take a pitch when I come and talk to you, Stephen.
Hell yeah, come get it. And hey, this summer, I had a New York cop cut his patch off his shirt and give it to me.
That's law.
I'm like, but I'm dedicated. I'm telling them all about it. But anyway, so I did get to see their tie down room, and I did get to go see their death house and how they do things. Well, I'll be danged if he didn't tell me, hey, swing by tomorrow. We're doing an execution. And I'm like, swing by tomorrow.
For a cup of tea.
Hey, do you want to come by? I'll show you what's up.
Execution going
Danielle
on.
Danielle.
Yeah, Danielle. Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. Come on.
That's crazy.
So And I didn't plan on telling y'all this story, but I want to tell you. So I was not in the room. Disclaimer: I didn't get to go do that. Right. But they.
You sound so eager. You sound disappointed. No.
Well, no, but I.
No, I want to see it too.
In the spirit of education.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
I feel like I need to live it. Yeah. Okay. So, but anyway, so I did. I swung by the next day, and my stepdad was actually with me. He traveled with me for this event, and so we walk out, and it's a huge brick, tall, red building. Across the hall from it, or excuse me, across the street from it is another small building, and that's where the family and everybody sits before they call over time for the execution. And this will really put into the raw, like they really just killed somebody. So I'm sitting there, and the way that they do it there is where that building is facing the big main prison where I had just toured their death house. On one side of it is a road. And then on the other side of it is a road. Well, on one side is where all the people who come picket to say, you know, murder of, you know, fighting against it, okay?
And the other side.
Other side is.
They're jumping for joy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, check this out, okay? I get there, and there are people with loudspeakers and screaming and hollering against the death penalty and, you know, just going nuts. And I told my stepdad, and I mean, I'm not trying to speak for anybody else. I was like, well, I'm for the death penalty. So we need to kick it to the other side, right? So we walk on over to the other side, and it's
hi, I'm Kelly. I'm here to see the execution.
Oh, no, you're gonna love this. It was just us.
Oh, really?
It was me and my stepdad, and there was a van parked. I have pictures of it. There was a van parked there, and it said, like, justice served, you know? So it was me, my stepdad, and the creepy van, you know, just chilling on the street corner. And I don't know about you, but, like, what do you do with your hands when you're at a, like, do I just cross them? Do I just stand there? Like, what do I do, you know? How does one act at the execution? So I don't know. It was so bizarre. Well, then this young...
an episode of proper
etiquette.
Yeah, that's an how does
execution
one get
etiquette.
Right? Well, I can tell you this. When it was about to happen, I don't remember the exact time, but he had told me, and there was a big clock, and so I saw it. I mean, clockwork, literally. You saw the people come out and walk across the street, and they entered through a front door, and then all these vehicles showed up, Cadillacs, SUVs, all this kind of stuff. Everybody steps out with a 10-gallon cowboy hat on, you know, starched, like, justice, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And they come walking in, the officials and all that kind of stuff. And then this young guy stepped out, and I just remember his tag said Boudreaux on it, which I was like, hey,
what's
out, right? Boudreaux boy. But he had caution tape, and so he had tied it, and then he came to us, tied it to, like, the van mirror or whatever. It was like, don't cross the line. I was like, no problem, bro. He walked all the way to the other side, tied it in front of the screaming people, and then back. So you were not allowed inside that area. So we're just kind of sitting there, and I don't know if I expected fireworks or what, but it was just very quiet other than the screaming memes on the other side. Right. So I looked at my stepdad, and I was like, hey, I want to go talk to people on the other side. He's like, don't go stirring something up. I'm like, I'm not going to stir anything up. I don't have any executions I'll be in, you know, near. I'm going to go talk to some people. So I walked over there, and I don't know about you, but the people who were screaming and hollering, I'm not interested in. The quiet old man standing in the back holding the Catholic candle, I want to talk to you. I'm just curious. So it's, I'd say he was in his 60s. He had white hair. He had a beard, button up, like pearl snap looking type shirt, khaki pants. He's holding a Catholic candle, and he had like a, what are those, like, Indiana Jones looking hat on? And he had the candle, and he had a white piece of paper in his hand. Legs were crossed, and he was just kind of leaning up on, like, a utility thing. So I was like, hey, how are you? And he was like, I'm fine. How are you? I said, you know, my name's Kelly Jennings. And he was like, I said, well, so I'm just curious while we're waiting, you know, why are you on this side? And he's like, are you the media? I was like, no, I'm just nosy. I'm just curious why you're on this side. He's like, all right, cool. Well, he said, you know, I've been a professor a long time. I'm a professor of criminal justice.
Oh, and you were like, oh, wow.
Like, oh, yeah, fan club. And he said, I'm at Sam Houston University. And he said, so if he's listening to this, I listened when you spoke. And he said, I've been doing this a long time. He said, and I just, everything aside from what this guy did, he said, I just don't want to take someone's life. I just don't want that on my hands. And I feel as of, participant of this culture and community that if I agree with it, then I'm complicit in what's happening. And I said, okay, but I mean, you didn't do anything. And he was like, I was like, he did it. The guy they're killing did it. And he's like, well, what's his name? The guy they're killing. Yeah. Oh, bro, gut check. Yeah. I was like, I don't know.
No, I was just here for the fireworks.
I didn't know you were going to give me a piece of humble pie.
I was
pie.
Just invited here last minute. I don't know.
I was just invited. I
got a patch, though. Somebody said execution, and I come running.
I know the left arm guy.
Stay back. I got the patch.
But it really was like a piece of humble pie.
That's crazy, man.
Because I was like hardcore, you know?
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, what did he do? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, so you are on that side. He said, what a great teacher.
Right,
he said, you're on that side. And you don't even know why. You're hardcore for it, and you don't even know why he's here. And I said, well, you don't know why he's here. He said, yes, ma'am, I do. Yeah. And I was like, that piece of paper, he unrolled it. He said, I'm going to give you this. I'd like you to read it. And I'm not saying he didn't do it.
Right.
I just think you ought to know who you're putting to death before you do it.
Right.
Touche, my friend. Touche. We talked some more. It was really a nice talk. He said, look, I really appreciate you coming over here not yelling at me. I'm like, I'm not yelling at anybody. Right. Part of society is we got to learn to disagree.
Right.
So anyway, I walked back over, told my stepdad what happened, and I'm reading it. And one block in the other direction, one block was a gas station. And the guy they were putting to death had gone in and beaten the clerk to death with like a whiskey bottle and robbed him and killed him.
Wow.
And he was getting death for it, whatever, you know. And that didn't change my mind. I feel like once you're put on death row, you've earned it.
Right.
But then it was time for the execution. And so we just kind of stood there and the time passed. I know it takes a couple of minutes or whatever, and the time passed. Well, then everybody on the other side packed up their speakers and their microphone. They dispersed. Boudreaux officer came out, and he rolled up the tape. Well, when he got back up, because he did it in reverse. Now he's started over there, and he come out, and I said, wait a minute, that's it? And he's like, yeah. I said, he's dead? Yeah. I mean, like minutes had gone by, and he was like, y'all have a good evening, and he just rolled it up. And walked back inside. And so it was now kind of dusk, I guess it was dark. My stepdad and I are just standing there. Everyone's gone. And it was just like, man, like, that's it. I mean, someone just died. And the coroner's van pulled up on the side we were on. They opened gates and that van drove through. That was a wrap.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome story, Kelly.
That's a hell of a story. And you never would have got to be there to talk to that guy and witness that execution had you not been recognized by the major as being part of Bloody Angola.
Yep.
And he's the one that invited you over.
Yeah, no coincidences.
There you go. And
awesome.
Fire. And so I love this, the whole Chase Team episode, of first ever. And I mean, I can't wait to hear the something we play about.
Yeah.
I know we were cutting up and having a good time with it, but it was fire. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you for, coming on and sharing all that stuff with us. We appreciate it. And I know Woody had said we're going to try to have you on at least once a season.
Yeah, just come. I think if it, and, you know,
share some of your great knowledge.
I'd be honored.
It's excellent. And we did three episodes today, including this one. And thank you again.
Mm-hmm.
I know Chase Team is going to love it. And Chase Team members, y'all, give it a shout out when you post it or whatever.
Yeah,
Let us know what you think about it. I knew it was fire.
Yep. So thank y'all very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We love you, Chase Team members.
Love you.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And I forgot what we say.
we're those of Bloody
Angola. A podcast 142 years in the making.
The story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
That was good.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie. Calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three. I'm here for life, I'm here to die. Inside these walls,
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.